This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hi there, I'm Lee, and I've recently fallen in love with old giant monster movies.
And I'm Sarah, and I hate watching movies.
And we're the hosts of Kaiju Coffee Break, where we talk about kaiju like Godzilla, King Kong, and Gamera.
And coffee.
Every episode, we talk about one kaiju movie over our morning coffee and tell you all about it. We're going to talk about what we loved.
What we didn't love.
What was awesome.
And what was ridiculous.
We're going to start with Godzilla, but then branch out into other kaiju movies as we go.
I'm so excited.
So tune in on pantspending.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Kaiju Coffee Break.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I'm having a hard enough time with the platypus.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Dee Abrams. And now your host. After watching the presidential debate, he thinks America should just be alone and find itself for the next 4 years. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. What's up, guys? Thanks for coming around for another episode of the show. We got a great show for you. Joining us soon is comedian Dee Abrams. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff going down in America today, Spokane, and across the country. All kind of good stuff. Not good stuff. It's depressing stuff. But we're going to find a way to put a good spin on it, solve some stuff, and talk about some things going on, and some comedy too in there. So don't miss out. Before we get into that, guys, I just want to say go to Deese Comedy /calendar. Check out some of the dates that are coming back live around the area. This Friday, I will be at The Globe, downtown Spokane. We're doing our virtual show and Off the Cuff, where you get to decide what we make jokes about. You give us suggestions. We'll make jokes. I got a couple other comedians coming with me. Tom Meisfer, Joe Robbie, Sophie Tomey, Rob Wentz. It's going to be a hootenanny, the very definition of a hootenanny. If you look up hootenanny, you're going to see Off the Cuff next to that in the dictionary. And as always, guys, we give you this show free twice a week, The Social Minute free. Like and follow, friends, share, hashtag laughs. Use that, share some stuff around. That's the biggest thing you can do is spread the word, spread some mirth around your friends. But also, if you want to, you can donate at Deese Casillas, Deese-Casillas at Venmo. Or you can subscribe on my website, because again, the content's free, but we could still use a little income, so check it out, guys. All right, that's all for me, for now. That's all for just me. Now, let's get into it. Please welcome comedian Dee Abrams.
Yeah, man, just make it easy. I gotta plan my time out. I think I'm doing like 7 this week, and then a couple the next week, and then you take a week off. So,
oh, that's great. That is great.
Well, you know, when you're unemployed, you gotta have time for yourself, right?
Yes.
I don't even know if I was employed before. I was at least working. I guess employed isn't the word, but now, fully unemployed, just can't do shit. World changed real quick, man.
Well, tried insurance.
Selling or getting some?
Well, both.
Life insurance, so yeah. I just kill myself and let someone get some money at least out of me.
How it works.
Yeah. So back on the show, guys, we have D. Abrams, comedian. You've heard him on here before. You've seen him around town performing in other areas. We got a lot to talk about, man. There's a lot of I hadn't seen you for a while, and then we ran into each other downtown Spokane at a protest of the Spokane's wonderful police department and sheriff's department, who's. If for those of you who don't know, Spokane, 100th largest city in America, 5th deadliest police force. So we're doing real well. We're climbing those.
Yes. And what's surprising about that is a lot of those, unfortunately, those victims are white people.
Yeah. Well,
that's what makes it so terrible.
Right. That's the tragic part.
Police are shooting white people.
Yeah. And that's when you got to pay attention. That's when Spokane is like, wait a second. There's white people getting abused in here, too. We can't have that shit.
I called home to my family, and I said that there's not enough people of color up here for the police to shoot.
Right. They got to practice somehow, D. They can't listen. They can't be good at shooting black people. They're not great at shooting white people. they tried to fit that on the side of their cruisers, but they felt it was too wordy. Yeah. So.
It's a shame. It is a shame because policing, you know, should never end up with death while in custody.
Yeah.
You know, if you're resisting bruises, bumps, you know, maybe some an extremity may get strained or what have you.
Yeah.
But it should never, ever end in death in America. And the fact that, you know, African-Americans are 3 times more than likely to get shot by the police.
Right.
You know, I have a 50-50, you know, everybody was speaking back in the day about black-on-black crime.
But, yeah.
But black-on-black crime has nothing compared to what law enforcement is doing in our communities.
Yeah, well, and I mean, let's talk about that. Even if... despite any black on black crime, comparatively, if you're talking people killing each other in the streets, the police should be held to a higher standard anyway. Like, even if the numbers were the same or less with police, it's like, it doesn't even matter. The police shouldn't even have that where, you know, they're the people who are supposed to be upholding the law, you know? So like, even if that was the case, how the hell can you even still justify it, you know? But people still find a way to say that, oh, yeah, it's fine, you know, that they look at what's happening right now and can't even see that there's an issue.
There's a big issue when the police are so militarized till that the citizens that they come up upon on a daily basis are demonized in the police system. You know, no longer are you policing citizens, you're policing an enemy.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be poor whites, poor people of color. Normally they ain't got money,
right?
So therefore they can be shot.
Yeah. Well, they're what lawyers refer to as an empty bag. You know, they just don't have any financial ability to, like, police have just become this kind of forced to extort money from the people. And it's like, oh, well, if we can't get money out of you by arresting you for something, then I guess whatever, we don't need you, basically.
And that I'm pretty sure that's not what most police departments are trying to convey, but especially when they're dealing with people of color and people with mental health illnesses.
Yeah.
Where to me, in my opinion, you know, I've never done law enforcement, but I've bounced in clubs, and it's simply a thing of wrapping a person up,
yeah,
and pushing them in the direction that you need them to go. Being the police, wrap them up, you know, and put them in the back of the car. You know, being a police officer, you should be able to have a discipline and professionalism to deal with the, you know, the F the police and pig and whatever else,
right,
that comes along with it. But basically, when it comes to an arrest, nobody's airway should be obstructed, period. You grabbing extremities, you're securing extremities, and if need be, pick them up and put them in the back of the car and get them booked. Just that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's, I was listening to someone talking about how every police officer should at least have a purple belt in jujitsu and, you know, get them to that level of training instead of only training, focusing their training on, firearms.
Yes.
So they're, you know, if you're focusing on the main, they do about 20 hours of like combat training in the academy, and then they never have to retrain on it, on anything that's like hand-to-hand combat stuff. The police never have to retrain on it. They have to re-up on their firearms every single year. So if you're putting the focus on the firearm, what do you think your officer is going to reach to every time?
The,
you know,
firearm.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, if you can put that focus on, okay, on jujitsu, on grappling, on being able to wrap someone up, as you're saying, like that makes such a difference in their reaction and what they're able to do. I mean, most of these are close combat, not even combat, because it's not even like they're fighting, but they're close quarters situations. It's generally, these shootings are not from a far distance. They're right up next to each other.
Yes, in course of Jacob Blake.
You know,
that was, he had the back of the guy's tank top.
Yeah.
And was popping shots in his back.
Which is just crazy.
You know, I mean, no, you don't want the so-called suspect or perpetrator or whatever to get a weapon. But in the case of Jacob Blake, you only a foot behind him and you can't pounce on him.
Right.
You can't take him to the ground.
Well, there were what? Were there three officers there?
Yes. Yeah. There was three.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've seen season after season of cops wrestling with all the meth.
Every meth head from the trailer park.
Yes.
Yeah.
Season after, how many seasons? What, 8, 10 seasons of Cops?
Of Cops, is like, went for like 30 years, man.
Thank you. And I mean, they was chasing, they was running, and they was tackling and putting people in the back of the car. Just that simple. You know, I know. And like you said, if all they train is guns, and they're not training that, okay, you're policing citizens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't know if that young black man with dreads is going to Gonzaga, majoring in engineering or what have you.
Right.
They just happen to like Gucci Mane or Bootsy. You know, you don't know if that Hispanic kid, you know what I'm saying, works at his father's barbershop.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he just happens to like lowriders.
Right. Yeah.
That don't mean that he got kilos of cocaine and heroin. You know, although seldomly.
Although there's a chance. Listen, one of them's got. There are people who are bringing in kilos of cocaine and heroin in Spokane. I'm going to tell you, it's not any black people or Mexicans. there are people who live on the South Hill and are making six figures a year. Yeah, it's really wild. I mean, I learned very quickly when I moved to Spokane. I had been here a couple of months and I was pulled out of my car with four officers, all guns pointed at me, telling me I stole my car. Even after they had my driver's license, my registration, insurance, they still kept yelling with all their guns pointed at me on the ground, all four guns pointed at me, that it was a stolen car. Where the fuck did I get that car? And like, they're literally holding my information with a picture ID of me and shit. And I was like, I'm sitting there going like, what? And again, there's never, like, I tell people this story or the times that I've been beat up by the police, and they're like, oh, well, you just go make a report the next day, fight in court. I'm like, there's no report. There's no day in court. Like, that's going to go in my coffee table book, like, what brown people think white people talk about. Because, like, there's no day in court when you get your ass beat by the police. Like, I hate to tell you that. You don't go down and ask for the chief, and then they give you a steak and a blowjob and tell you they're sorry. Like, you just get your ass beat.
Not with people of color.
No. Yeah. And like, you know, like after that incident with the Spokane Police Department, again, people are like, well, what happened? I'm like, eventually they just fucking told me to go home and they left. Like, they didn't, I don't even know if they were looking for a car like mine, you know, or if they just saw me and were like, we want to like, or just assumed, you know? So like, it's those experiences that a lot of people really can't look at, and, you know, cause they've never had them. So they just don't, they can't even wrap their head around them, you know?
Yes. I've had some, few encounters,
the softest way of saying
a few encounters with the police, you know, during the demonstrations here, you know, the pepper spray and the rubber bullets and all the rest of that type of stuff. We really have to change the culture of our police. They're policing citizens.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a, the police are not a military, well, shouldn't be on this militaristic occupation of people. It should be, you know, I mean, it should be more integral into societies living in those low income and middle class neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That would be welcome. That's always welcome to have a police on the block. You know, people would feel safer there. We would, we as people and citizens would get to know, hey, you know,
right?
There's a guy that work at a butcher shop, and this across the street there's Officer Friendly,
right?
And he's really cool.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And we and I think over the last, you know, since the late 80s, there's been this militarization of police and this buildup of prisons and everything, and come to find out that you know, crime is falling across the country. And you know, I think the focus should now be more on if you're going to arrest somebody, there should not be a death, period.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, drug dealers know that when bodies show up, the feds show up.
Yeah.
So why would police be any different? When you start producing bodies,
right,
and overly brutalizing people, you can't get upset when people take to the streets and say defund the police.
Yeah.
That is a viable democratic system at work when the people are able to say to whatever agencies or indoor institutions that govern them that this stuff needs to stop.
Yeah.
You know, that's not as 45 would say anti-police propaganda, but that's the truth. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that, you know, black people, black men, three times more than likely to get shot by law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's sickening.
Right. Yeah. It's a crazy statistic. And you all, you know, the it's funny because I have these conversations with people regularly. And usually they're like, oh, well, you know, they start throwing out like the amount of like, well, this many white people were killed and this many black people were killed. And I'm like, yeah. That's not how statistics work, though. Black people make up 13% of this country. White people make up over 70% of this country. So take the number of black people, times it by 5.5, and now you have the actual statistics, you know, and percentages. And it is, and then that number is grossly different, you know. And people still, like I said, can't object. Part of the problem is we can't. There's a whole swath of people in this country that still are unable or unwilling to admit that there's a problem, even. Like, there's a fundamental, we can't even agree that there's an issue.
The reason why we cannot agree that there is an issue, the reason why there's so much backlash against, you know, Project 1619 is because that is telling America's very ugly truth.
Yeah.
And that truth is that people that look like me were bought, sold, molested on all types of levels. You know, being a slave meant not only were you worked to death, but you were molested too.
Yeah.
You was, and then, you know, the even worse part of that is that coming out of chattel slavery, then you have, you know, the antebellum period with Reconstruction, and shortly thereafter Jim Crow,
right?
And you know, and then if they're not physically brutalizing you, mentally brutalizing you, you know, through the culture of America, you see, black people in America are born with a half a ton of adversity. at birth.
Yeah.
That's the truth of the matter. That's the truth of the matter. For 400 years, 401 years, this country has been systematically racist against black and indigenous and people of color, period. This is a white supremacy system, and it's very ugly how this system was built. And so you start teaching these things to middle American whites, which is the truth, which is the history. It doesn't make them feel good.
Yeah.
And they feel uncomfortable.
Right.
And instead of leaning into it, saying that, okay, we understand that slavery existed here, slavery existed everywhere, and in every culture, by some way, somehow,
right,
people held people in this position all across. Acknowledge that, you know what I'm saying? And also, on, more importantly, acknowledge the biases in these white supremacist systems.
Yeah.
Like monuments, like, you know, I mean, I think, I seriously think that white people have so much more culture that they can glean from than Confederates and Nazis.
Yeah. There's probably a couple other things.
You know, I mean, I would love to see, you know, I would love to see some of the great composers, you know what I'm saying, statues up in
yeah.
place of, or either architects or scientists, or whoever, you know, invented the 7 Series BMW.
Yeah,
that's a statue.
That's a nice. That he might have been a Nazi too, though. That's a German.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but
well, we had to fat check him, but he deserves
yeah,
a statue
something somewhere. Yeah,
anybody that engineered BMWs deserves.
Yeah,
a statue.
drive with pride, drive with power, white power. That's there. In little parentheses, in there, I mean, there's so much. It's weird because like. I was talking to someone earlier today on a show I was recording also where, you know, America's in this like super woke time and they're wanting to correct all these injustices and, you know, things like tearing down the statues absolutely makes sense to me. Like, we don't need those statues up. But then it's like, what about this going back and like editing movies like Gone with the Wind or Dumbo and stuff like that? Things like that are like, part of me is like, that was a thing of the time. Don't we need to understand, like, be like, this happened and be like, this was our history. Erasing it to make you feel better, like these white people being like, okay, look, we took it away. Like, it's not around anymore. It's like, yeah, it still happened though, right? Like, can't we be like, yes, that was what you did. Can we learn from that? Or just is it making them feel better to just erase it and be like, oh, it never happened?
I think one when you put up when you're defending Confederate statues and the Confederate you are defending these white supremacy emblems, and that's basically what
yeah.
they are. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. You know, the city's named after Andrew Jackson.
It's right there. It's literally right there.
You know, a white supremacist. Not only that, in Jacksonville, you got, you know, Confederate Park.
Yeah.
You know what
oh,
I mean?
Oh, wow. Jeez.
You know, got a park named Confederate Park, and it got a statue. But I think what we need to do with that is tell the whole history from 1619.
Yeah.
The whole history. You know what I'm saying? That out of ignorance at during that time, this system, you know, and I wouldn't even say out of ignorance because that's giving the system an excuse, but the system has, I mean, Romans, they had slaves, Spartacus,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
that's a true story.
Yeah,
you know, Spartacus rose up. He was a white slave.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, he was the Nat Turner of Rome.
I don't know if they spun it that way, but yeah, yeah, you,
there's no for real. For
yeah,
real. Spartacus
yeah.
was.
Yeah,
he was a little bit more successful than Nat
sure,
Turner.
Yeah.
But you know, but he was a slave, and Spartacus rose up. You know what I'm saying? And not to mention in Ireland with Queen Boudica. You know what I'm saying? When Rome, I mean, you always got some big people taking advantage of people.
Sure, The history of the world is built on the backs of slaves, for sure.
Yes, and whether that slavery be, you know, chattel slavery or just a system of we're not going to pay you what you're worth, we're not going to raise the minimum wage, that also creates a certain type of slave.
Yeah.
You know, when single mothers have to work two jobs and they only got $25 left after every paycheck.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's a form of slavery, too, that needs to be addressed.
And I think, you know, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned how, you know, antebellum rolls into Jim Crow and the kind of these different civil rights eras where there's still forms of oppression. And it seems like it's just kind of the government's really like the government, our system's really good at just kind of massaging it into another form that's more palatable, but still oppresses people. You know, like they've found a system where they can literally financially oppress people to the point of basically being obsolete. I mean, it's essentially being obsolete and to the point where they can't do things like, you know, obviously physically they can vote, but they're so far out of the system or there's so many obstacles and things like that. And keeping those people in a cycle that doesn't include them or involve them in our bureaucracy and our system anymore.
I think now, right about now, is the one thing 45 administration has done is waking up the common man, you know, because prior to 45, most Republicans were boring. Predictable.
Sure.
We know what they're gonna do. They're gonna argue to take away some stuff, and they're gonna argue for some tax breaks.
Yeah, we want guns and no abortion.
I mean, just we're accustomed to that. But what 45 and his administration is doing with kneecapping the postal service is just downright poor sportsmanship.
Yeah,
it's cheating. You know what I'm saying? I mean the post office. You know, and I estimate that he probably got 42%, you know, and most polls say 42, 44, possibly 45, 40. But he's way behind in the battle states, Biden Harris, and it's just frustrating, but. I will say that what we're seeing is democracy alive.
That it is nice to see a lot of people who were, I don't even want to say complacent, just kind of, you know, going through their life and you know, things weren't affecting them, but kind of coming awake and realizing that there is an issue. There's those people that obviously won't even admit it, but then there's the people who are coming awake and being like, oh, this is an issue. It has been a problem. Like, I just didn't realize it. My only concern is, like, are we too late to make a change in this country? Is the government too big? Is the system too big? Is the people too small? And, you know, the ones in charge have so much power and wealth that it's like, are the people able to really take any of that back or enough of it back, I guess?
I would say that the people are able to take back whatever they want to take back whenever they want to take it, because truly in any system is power to the people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not just power. I mean, the problem with 45 administration is he's trying to govern from the fringes, you know, and that fringe, the fringes may be 33-40%, but that's not America.
Yeah.
America is a very diverse place, you know, LGBTQ, Hispanics, Asians, Blacks, not to mention uneducated, educated white and Black people. So when you're trying to govern from the fringes, like 45 and his administration are trying to do, I mean, it's an uphill battle. It really is, for the sake of so-called conservatism and whatnot.
Yeah.
Now, I don't believe in peaceful protest. I believe peaceful protest is stage protest. That's what during the daytime between 12 and 1 when the church people march.
Yeah.
when the church yeah. people march.
Yeah, Martha that, hands out cookies and juice afterwards and everybody.
Yeah, that is a stage protest. Real yeah. protest is never coordinated with law enforcement. Real protest starts with bricks, fire, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I take protesting. I've said to many people before, protesting is like boxing. We won't marching out in the streets between 12 and 1. That's the jab or feint.
Yeah.
The right hand is this brick going through your window and stuff is going to burn.
Right.
And that's the way we've, from the Revolutionary War to any French Revolution,
yeah.
that's how change happened.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, I said that exact same thing a while back. I'm like, listen, the Revolutionary War wasn't won through peaceful protest, folks. And the conversation of rioting and things like that in the protests of the you know, bricks going through windows has come up a lot. And when people ask me like, well, is that, you know, that's not right. Da, da, da. And I'm like, listen, I grew up in South Central in the '80s, lived through the, you know, Rampart days in LA wow. and the LA riots and shit. Wow. Like I believe me, I saw it all and, you know, dealt with LAPD at the height of their brutality, and you know, all my older cousins especially were all gangbangers. Like, I watched it happen. I was there. Like, the sometimes, like, you just have people try to peacefully protest. Like, let's take this Kaepernick right now, try to peacefully take a knee for a couple years, you know, get up and throw the ball. And then, okay, well, guess what? You're not going to pay attention. Now we got to burn some shit down. And then it forces people to pay attention. People have to listen then, at least address it before no one even will address it. And I'm like, yeah, it's unfortunate, but also, anger and frustration comes out in weird ways when you're unheard for decades or millennia even. And these people don't have a voice and no one hears them or hears their problem. It's like, okay, well, guess what? If I burn down this part of the city, you're going to have to at least fucking look at me and fucking look me in the eyes. And now we're going to, you know, you're going to have to at least acknowledge me. And then after that, maybe we can start to have a conversation. But, you know.
Yeah, I like the fact that a lot of these riots, you know, I shouldn't be saying this, but back in the day, you know, we used to burn up our own neighborhoods. It seemed like in the 21st century, you know, the people are going to the high-end stores.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Where's the Apple store? Where's Nike store?
Yeah, they're going to the high-end stores and protesting. But none of this stuff would happen. Martin Luther King said a riot is the language of the unheard.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what Martin Luther King said.
Absolutely,
he didn't advocate violence, but he knew, just like we know, that this is a form of boxing. Us marching in the streets, that's just a jab. That's a feint.
Yeah,
you know. But when the lights go out and some property get destroyed, then now y'all want to come to the table and see how we, because America's about making money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's still capitalist at the end of the day.
It's still capitalism at the end of the day, like you said, and it's about making money. And we need to get these biases out of our systems,
yeah,
so that we can become a more viable, balanced nation. Because, I mean, when America, you know, is beautiful to look out in your neighborhood, see Asians, blacks, you know, Muslims, Christians, Jews. It's wonderful to see this variety of people that you agree with, you disagree with, but they're people, you know what I mean? And we all want the same thing, you know. We
yeah.
basically all want the same thing. We want fairness. We want equality. Everybody wants fairness and equality.
Yeah.
There has to be a sharing of power, you know, and every person should be represented in the highest levels and different levels of government. And we can't go around being this country ran by, you know, older white males.
Yeah. Right. Eventually it's got to change, you'd think.
You know, I mean, 50% of our population are women that are highly qualified to step into these high governmental positions, like, you know, Senator Harris, It is great, and I will say it's great to see the volatility, to see the vibrance of an alive democracy.
Yeah.
Because speaking truth to power in certain systems get you killed.
Right.
You know, or at least poisoned.
Yeah. Yeah, fall down a stairwell accidentally. So what do you think with moving forward with this election? Assuming Biden wins, which, you know, like you said, he's ahead right now, but anything can happen. And also, you know, same thing with last election. Clinton looked like she was ahead moving into the election, but that a lot of that's because Trump supporters don't admit in polls that they'd vote for Trump. So hopefully Biden actually wins given the two choices, although I'm not a big fan of Biden either. What do you think it looks like moving forward, assuming that happens?
I would say that the Biden-Harris administration would bring much needed normality to that office and to the system.
At least like a stability kind of, not so yes. much chaos with yes. the tweeting at 3 a.m. about how yeah. the Chinese government's of chumps or whatever the hell fucking Trump's yeah. doing.
Yeah. 45 is losing because you can tell by his reaction to everything. If you're secure in a system, you know what I'm saying? And he hasn't been secure as a president from day one.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first time in my lifetime that I've ever heard of a president talking bad about generals, CIA, FBI. He talks bad, deep state. When have we ever heard of deep state, that apolitical element to our establishment?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Deep state. And when have we ever heard a president, you know, talk bad about that? I believe, we'll be giving another boxing analogy, that Donald Trump is on his back foot. You know, he doesn't trust the mail. Everything is doom and gloom because he's getting briefed every morning, basically like this. A45, black people ain't going to vote for you. Educated white women ain't going to vote for you. Some uneducated, undereducated white women ain't going to vote for you. Asians ain't going to vote for you. Hispanics ain't going to vote for you.
Yeah.
and he's reacting to that. He knows he's losing because
right.
if he was secure in his position, he wouldn't try to kneecap the post office. He wouldn't be, saying something negative. He wouldn't be saying negative things about the mail-in balloting and
right.
because that's we've done this time and time again throughout history of America, mail-in ballots, and the system hasn't had any issues in the 200 plus years that this establishment has been, this experiment has been going on. So I honestly think that the Biden-Harris ticket is playing the music that most Americans want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, Biden-Harris ticket is definitely, you know, not saying that, is telling the truth. Yes, we have racial problems. Yes, there's systemic racism. We plan to root those things out. That's all people want to hear. That's
yeah.
all what people of color want to hear, is that, yeah, the system is biased and we know why the system is biased. But, you know, it's going to take us a while to root out those elements. Biden-Harris campaign is saying that. Environmental issues, Biden-Harris. Anything that is important to the majority of sane, common sense thinking Americans, Biden-Harris is definitely ticking those boxes.
Yeah.
As opposed to the doom and gloom of 45 in its administration.
It will be interesting to see how things do change, and if just kind of the overall tone of America and, you know, the culture does shift a little bit. Do you think there will even, how do you think the debates will go? Or do you think they'll even go to the have the debates? Because there's been some speculation that Biden won't even show up for the debates. I mean, Trump obviously would want to go toe-to-toe with this guy just because he can't. The nice thing about Trump is he's easy to draw out, because all you have to do is make him feel a little threatened, or a little like you're, you know, and that he will, anytime you insult him in any way or think undermine him, he's going to try to come out hard. So he definitely would want to debate.
I don't think Trump, that would be a good idea for Trump to debate Biden. One, because Biden has the truth. Number two, you know, like I said, he is insecure in his position right now in his campaign. I mean, you've been trailing for the last 4 to 5 months, you know, not to mention you blew through $800 million trying to fight off Bloomberg.
Jeez, you know what I'm saying? The guy who was in the running for a week.
Yes. And then for him to say the most paranoid statement that, well, we got to take a drug test before we
debate.
I mean, okay, are we arm wrestling? Are we,
yeah. What drugs does he think? What does he think Biden's doing that's going to help him in a debate? Like, I don't, like, is he fucking, are we drug testing like methamphetamines and shit? Or what is he?
Ginkgo biloba, whatever helps cognitive, like, whatevers, you know. Ginkgo biloba's focus factor. We going to test for that.
Yeah, he's taking that. Right. It's just too much vitamin D. What the hell is he taking? I don't know what he thinks Biden could take that could possibly help him in a debate. But yeah, it's those wild things that he throws out there that he just starts
losing.
Well, he just, the funny thing is, he's like, he just starts talking, and I don't even think he gets so far ahead of himself and then realizes that, and then has to like look at it and then starts going like, oh man, I've been talking for like 10 minutes. I have no idea what the hell I just said. And then has to like backtrack and be like, oh, this is the shit. What did I just say? I said, take a drug test. Why the hell would, you know, it doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. You would think if he had any level of, and I keep using the word sportsmanship, that, you know, he would chill.
Yeah.
He would chill and just cruise and let whatever happen. You know, it's not like you're doing a good job, you and your administration doing a good job anyway.
Right.
You know, I mean, let's mention the coronavirus and then the town hall meeting, in which everybody clearly heard you say downplay. I like to downplay. And then during the town hall meeting, you was like, no, I didn't say that, but I upplayed my action. That's not going to fare well in a debate at all. And he knows this. Pence cannot debate his way out of a wet paper bag and during a rainstorm. So he's going to have a hard time with Senator Harris. I honestly believe that Biden hopefully will become president, and that will bring some normality. But you got that Trump cult, and they're armed, and they feel powerless, and they're armed.
Yeah.
So you know, domestic terrorism is, I think, could possibly happen during the Biden administration once he becomes president. You have a lot of, you know, people living in a fantasy of a white ran America, and America cannot stand or operate being ran by white males only, period. It's just not a good look.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point, because assuming Biden wins, Trump has mobilized and emboldened a portion of America to extremism.
Yes.
And no matter who wins the election, the other side is going to cry foul, and I feel like is going to react poorly. And if it's Trump's constituency, like you said, they are all angry white people with guns and bunkers in the woods.
Yes.
So, you know, they got canned food for months. They'll fucking bury themselves in the woods somewhere and fucking start some shit. And I feel like that could be one of the craziest things that happens out of all this. Because, I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be angry and they're going to react poorly and violently and assume that, because it's like they're fucking, you know, their leader, this crazy guy who just makes them feel like they're not the crazy fucking racist piece of shit they are, like they're just normal, will just have to go away. And then they're just left with no leader and spinning out of control. And like all of a sudden they'll either have to go back into hiding or attack. And that could be a really crazy thing.
I think that element, that fringe element, whether they follow Trump or not, they, you know, they got a QAnon congressperson in Georgia.
Oh yeah.
You know, so, hopefully that's an anomaly that won't happen again. You know, hopefully that's an anomaly that won't happen again. But that element, just like all other elements, social elements in this country, other peoples are taking advantage of the political process.
Yeah.
And that's even more dangerous. That's where we're at now. You know, you can neutralize domestic terrorists, but when that ideology is being pushed through Congress and the Senate and whatnot, then you have an infection of the system.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I just hope they don't get too political.
You know what
I mean? Too political. Barr up there saying that the Black Lives Matter movement is not concerned about black people, but concerned about political power. But that's how you get anything done in America.
Right. Yeah.
Is either you have a whole bunch of money and you can affect the system with finances, or you get political and you start campaigning. You know, that's how anything happens.
Yeah.
Everybody has to get organized and has to get political. But I do hope and pray that the Republican Party, you know, goes back to its the good old Republicans that we used to know and love. You know, like George W. Bush. I miss George W.
Right? Yeah.
Have good old George W.
Just goofy old George. Okay, and, you know, dodging shoes at fucking press conferences and shit.
His daddy, Reagan. Yeah. You know, just normal Republicans that, you know, want to cut social spending and lower taxes. We used to that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that was part of the problem, too, is that Trump, I mean, he's not a politician. He's not even a Republican. He only ran on the Republican ticket because that's like the nerve, because he was shrewd enough to be like, this is how I can win. I feel like that's the only reason he ran that way, was that he was shrewd enough to think that, like, these
was
are
he
the
a
people.
Democrat?
Yeah. Yeah. For years. So like, he was just like, these are the people I can kind of trick into, like, fool into, like, following me more dogmatically. And it worked, you know.
And you say he's not a politician. I mean, he's
a game show host.
But in the industries that he's accustomed to,
sure, yeah,
to moving in
real estate and stuff.
Real estate is all about money. Okay, once I got money for develop this property, then contractors, and ain't nobody saying no to me. You know,
right.
They're following out my directions to the T. That's the type of environment that he's used to being in. He's not used to being in a political arena where you know, you're going to be tested and people are not going to agree with you and people are not going to be beholden to you, and you're going to have to, you know, go across party lines in order to get stuff done.
You got to compromise. You can't say this. Yeah, I know, right? You got to, it's not just, I said this, I pay you, now go do it. There's a system and checks and balances and people in. You know, but that's, I think, part of the thing.
He doesn't have a personality for that type of checks and balances system.
God, no.
He doesn't. I mean, he basically, like, you know, with this, what's going on with the CDC, the misinformation with the CDC, everything must line up with the with what the president say. But, the, you know, but would 45 say he's not a scientist?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Apparently people had to take his test and whatnot in college, you know, so he's not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And he had, and being a leader. Being a leader, to me, is being able to know, you know, how to manipulate people in a way where they don't feel railroaded. You know what I'm saying? How to, like you say, to use the word compromise. And good leaders know how to compromise.
Right.
And he's an all or nothing type of dude coming from that property development background where basically, you know, I got $25 million. I want to build a golf course.
Yeah.
Let's get it done.
Right. Yeah. You just pay for it and buy it, you know.
Like he did with Stormy Daniels.
Right. Hey, you know, if you can pay for it and buy it, might as well. I always point back and, you know, despite transgressions in the White House that may have occurred when Clinton was in office, he was great politically with, you know, Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House and as a Republican and reaching across the aisle and, yeah, making compromises and doing, you know, well, I'm going to give a little here, you guys give a little here, and we find a way to meet in the middle. That was kind of the last time it feels like our country really was good at that. It kind of started leaning, the sides started leaning farther and farther away from each other, I feel like, after Clinton was in office. And it's just been downhill ever since, to the point where there's like no... they don't take America into consideration. They just take, they like for instance, this next stimulus package they want to do for coronavirus, right? That they've been holding off and they won't make a deal on. And they're trying to hold off until the election because they want to make whoever the next president is look like a hero, et cetera. And it's like, you're just fucking over 350 million Americans, you know, who are screwed right now without work and no income because you want to make a political point. It's like, you know.
Yeah, that is sickening.
Yeah.
That is sickening. I mean, all you had to do was roll that whatever that first stimulus package, roll that over again. Let's do that one.
Right.
Let's re-roll that beautiful bean footage on the people. And, you know, whoever becomes president, but put the people first.
Yeah.
I don't think 45 administration is that. 45 administration is all about posturing for whatever the Trump segment of the Republican Party. I still admire a lot of good Republicans out there. Lincoln Project, love them to death. And a lot of Republicans coming out speaking against him. You know, those are true patriots, you know, and in my opinion, we should not have 200,000+ deaths. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whole Salt Lake City gone. Whole Huntsville, Alabama gone. These are large cities,
right,
of people just basically gone. And all we had to do, we could have cut that in half if he would have reacted a month, maybe 2 weeks earlier,
yeah,
and came out with the truth. And the truth is that this disease will kill 5 to 6% of you guys.
Right.
Simple. Give it to the people like that. 5 to 6%. That may not seem to be a lot, but with the population, would you say 350 million?
Yeah, I think it's,
What's that, like 18, 20 million people dead possibly?
Yeah.
If we did the herd
immunity.
Immunity thing. But tell the people the truth. Don't downplay or sugarcoat anything. You know what I'm saying? 45 lacks humility and tone. You know, and that's what's going to get him out of the White House is his tone.
Yeah.
And his persona. It's not presidential. It's kind of mob bosses.
Yeah.
Which you know, 80 cronies go down and some of them got felonies.
Yeah.
You're a mob boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, what's the average length of time one of his cabinet members stayed employed like 3 months, maybe. Yeah. Like they just kept going to jail or getting, you know, I mean, like, it's like if they don't go to jail, they quit and write a book about what a piece of shit he is. You know, it's like that's the two options for people. And like I said, even when you have the general high-ranking generals and other high-ranking Republicans coming out and endorsing Biden, you're like, or actively, you know, talking against the current sitting president, like that says a lot. Like all the Joint Chiefs of Staff and things like that, when they're that against the sitting president.
Julius Caesar had the same issue that Trump had. And we've seen how that played out.
Yeah,
when your generals writing letters saying that you're unfit,
right,
that you're divisive, that you know, you basically don't give a fuck. You know,
yeah,
the game is over. That's for any ruler in history. When your generals turn against you, the game is over.
Yeah.
That's in the history.
Absolutely. No, that's very good point. I mean, I just want, you know, I just hope at some point I want it to be a situation like Hunt for Red October, where like some general like Denzel is just yelling at Trump, who's like Sean Connery in this case, just stand down, stand down. Just taking the keys for the White House from, be like, it's over. Listen, we can't deal with this anymore. You're off the submarine, man.
but this election is going to be real messy because he's not a sportsman.
Yeah.
He's not going to concede.
Well, what did he say the other day? He's like, I don't even know if he can do this, but I highly doubt it. But he talked about like possibly signing an executive order before he was out of office to make it so Biden couldn't be president or something like that. And I'm like, what the shit? What world are you living in that you're even like saying you're
that's childish. Yeah. That is so immature. And like and again, that's poor sportsmanship.
Yeah.
That's poor sportsmanship. You know what I'm saying? When you're beat, and you know, as a boxer,
you're beat.
You're beat. You lay there on the couch and you take and then you fight another day.
Right.
Or in boxing, somebody ring your bell, you take a knee.
Yeah.
You know, 45 is getting his bell rung. And my fear is he's going to try to tie this stuff up into the courts because he do not care about the establishment,
yeah,
this experiment that we call the United States of America. He do not care about the people. What he cares most about is his legacy. That is the only thing 45 cares about,
yeah,
is his legacy. You know what I'm saying? And if I was 45, I would be a good sportsman and concede. Because he would be more powerful with his 30%, 40%, you know, base outside affecting the system than he ever could be inside.
Yeah.
And it would take somebody with, I guess, good common sense and intellect to figure that out. You're a billionaire, 45.
Yeah.
Even if you lose, you can still mess with the liberal left. You can still donate monies.
Yeah, there's other ways to do it.
You can still donate monies. You can still endorse people. You still was once president.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully there's some advisors, you know, telling him you'll probably be more powerful outside of the system. That's where his power has always been, you know. I mean, he can't be in the arena, but he can definitely scalp tickets outside the arena.
Yeah, take away from the draw, the actual draw for the arena.
Yeah.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully, we start heading in the right direction. We got a couple minutes left before we get out of here. So before we do, obviously. Comedy, what you do, what I do, not really happening a lot right now, but I know you have some stuff going on or that you're planning down the road. Tell us about what you've got, what you've been working on during all this. Cause I know you've been working hard out there trying to get some stuff going.
Well, right now, June 19th, 2021, my company, The Comedy Cafe, is, working with, this, Spokane, NAACP, wonderful organization.
Yeah.
Been doing civil rights advocacy here in Spokane for over 100 years. We got a comedy show going on at the Bing. Some very talented Northwest comedians. On the 26th Saturday, there is a... shoot, I have the flyer. I'm tired.
That's all right, man.
But on the 26th, next Saturday, I'll be performing out at a music festival.
Oh, that's right,
up
at, yeah.
Up Indian Trail. But as far as comedy go, I sort of figure live comedy will be a trickle flow effect.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, live comedy is still a viable product. If you're able to get into a state that is at phase four.
Right.
You know, from what I see online is with people doing live shows, these shows are selling out, you know. So it'll be a trickle flow effect in the future. But live comedy, live music, you know, people are waiting for that.
So, yeah.
So, you know, promoters like yourself and me, it's just setting up traps in the future.
Yeah.
Late 2021, early 2022.
Just trying to throw that track out there. Hopefully something hits eventually. So, tell people where they can find you, social media, follow what any events and what's coming up.
Okay. Like I said, you know, on the 26th, I'll be doing this live music up at Indian Trails up at that park. And then June 19th at the Bing Crosby Theater, Spokane, NAACP, the Comedy Cafe is bringing a lot of funny people
okay.
from around the region. But that's 2021.
Yeah.
You can catch me on Facebook, you know, D. Abrams on Facebook, you know, hit me up, message me, what have you. We could chit chat and talk. Right now, I'm working with a group of comedians, and we're trying to put together a script for the Comedy Cafe sketch show.
Nice, okay.
That will be filmed, of course, 2021.
So just look ahead. But you know what? The crazy thing is, we're not that far away from 2021. So, like, you know, it seems like. It seems like a long ways away, but only because this year has been just wild. Time has not been existent. Although everyone keeps saying they hope they can't wait for 2020 to be over, but I'm like, it doesn't reset at midnight. Like, it could get worse. Like, like we don't know what's like.
Don't say that, man. Like, don't say that. You know. Not say, well, yeah, it could get worse.
But, yeah, we don't know what's in store.
Don't say that, please. Do not say that. It could get worse.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, whatever is in store is better. So, guys, follow D. Abrams on Facebook, Comedy Cafe, all the events around the area. There's some coming. They're coming in 2021. Once things open back up, there'll be plenty more, I'm sure. So just keep an eye out for those. But support live comedy when it comes back, because we're trying to make it happen. So when it does come back, you got to at least fucking come out. Otherwise, you know, well, what are we doing, man? You've been waiting this whole goddamn quarantine. People got to come out. All right, guys. Well, we're going to get out of here for today. We appreciate you hanging out for the Social Hour. I am Deese, and for D, thanks, man. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
All right. And we will see you next week.